During the Buddha's time, there were many people who had built a lot of spiritual merits that came to be born at that time. It was a very prosperous time in terms of the development of the mind. The Buddha, who had perfected his spiritual accumulations to the fullest, came down to be born during that era. Then the people of that time who had built a lot of spiritual merit already and had the opportunity to listen to the Buddha's teachings were able to see and know the Dhamma with little difficulty. Those with great spiritual merits were able to gain to the highest level of awakening just through listening to a single sermon. Or there were many who listened to the Dhamma from the Buddha and attained to Sotapanna, the first level of awakening. They changed their wrong views to those that were right views. So these beings were born and had the mental defilements of greed, hatred, and delusion in their hearts. But when they listened to the Dhamma from the Buddha or from one of his noble disciples, and they contemplated the teachings, those individuals were able to change their views from wrong to right views, and their mind could enter the stream of Dhamma without much difficulty. Even a murderous bandit, Angulimala, the Buddha could teach him and flip his heart over till he attained to becoming an arahant, a fully enlightened being. Or those who had everything in terms of wealth and riches, like Yasa, the millionaire's son, who had everything in the worldly and sensual sense, but when he grew dispassionate with the world, he listened to the Dhamma from the Buddha, and he was able to attain to becoming an arahant without much difficulty. This is the merit and the wholesome actions that they had developed in the past, waiting to fruit. And those that trained the mind very skillfully were able to develop special knowledges and psychic powers, such as being able to fly or float in the air. An example was Mahamoggallana's friend, who could fly up and get a sandalwood bowl of the millionaire Rajagaha and bring it back down to prove that arahants existed in this world. This made the millionaire Rajagaha gain faith in the Buddha and his teachings. For us, we are born in this modern era, and we haven't yet seen a human who can fly. But we may have heard of Lungpo Wan, a disciple of Venerable Ajahn Mun, who had flown into the sky, and a pilot flying overhead saw Lungpo Wan there on top of a cloud. Or Lungpo Sao, who sat meditation and his body would float up to the beam of the roof. In the beginning, Lungpo Sao didn't believe he could float up, so he put a matchstick on the beam, and he sat meditation, entered deep concentration, and floated up and brought the matchstick back down. So he knew that he could really float up into the air during meditation. This samadhi or concentration that is extremely firm is able to make the body extremely light to the point where it can float and fly into the air. I also have personally heard a story of Lungpo Uon, who was a disciple of Venerable Ajahn Chah, and he followed Venerable Ajahn Chah on arms round, and he said that Venerable Ajahn Chah would walk arms, but his feet would never touch the ground. It was as if he was stepping on the air just above the ground. Lungpo Uon saw it with his own eyes, and when Lungpo Uon was telling this story, I heard this story firsthand. So the Buddha's time, when there were many individuals who had psychic powers, who had trained their minds well, this is called prosperity in terms of the mind. Back then, there was little material development, but these days there is a lot of material development, but the development of the mind has diminished and degraded. So let us imagine that during the time of the Buddha, someone told them that in 2,500 years into the future, there will be a large steel eagle that will hold masses of people and fly into the skies and be able to travel tens of thousands of kilometers. The people back then who had no psychic abilities would hear this and they'd wonder how it would be possible. Or if they heard of a metal object that could dive into the water and travel far distances, or a metal object that could travel on tracks and go through tunnels at quick speeds, or a metal object that could go into space and travel to the moon and other planets. The people of that time would find it difficult to understand that it was possible. In comparison, we come to this present day, and the people here think, how could those people back in the Buddha's time see the Dhamma so quickly, or to train the mind in deep samadhi that was so powerful that it could allow one to fly and hover into the air wherever they wanted? How is it possible? This is a subject of jhana, or mental absorptions. Often they are things we can't even fathom. But if we ask, is it possible? Well, in this period, there are already trains that can magnetically float and travel in the air. This is the development of science. But when there is material and technological development, then people don't search for the training of the mind. The mind becomes attached to material development. This makes the mind not able to be released from suffering. Those in the Buddha's time had suffering as well. They had pain and sicknesses of the body, and they didn't have the medicine to treat it. But these days, there are still sicknesses that we don't yet have the medicines to make it completely disappear. But during the Buddha's time, they had great development in terms of the mind. So let us contemplate this comparison, that when the world develops materially, then the mind deteriorates like this. But after contemplating, don't be discouraged and try your best to practice the Dhamma and to train the mind. Sometimes the mind has greed, anger, and delusion, and when we are aware of this, then we have to practice the Dhamma with it. If we have anger, we don't want it to be there, we want it to disappear. This feeling is vibhava tanha. We don't want it to be or to have it. We don't accept the truth. When anger arises, we have to accept that it's normal to have this arise when the mind has upadana or attachments, this feeling of self, of me and them. There arises feelings of love or hate. This is where we practice. We have the mindfulness to know that the mind has anger right now. Have mindfulness to watch the mind that has anger arise. If our mindfulness is good, then the dosa or the anger will disappear. Mindfulness or sati is a wholesome object, and the dosa or the anger is an unwholesome object. If mindfulness is stronger and we have more mindfulness, then we can know things as they arise and the anger passes away. Then if love arises, then mindfulness knows it in time and the love passes away. Whether it is feelings of love, anger, hate, or fear, they all arise, stay, and pass away. If we know to this level, then this is seeing the mind as just a mind. All feelings are just simply feelings, whether it is love, hate, jealousy, disgust, fear, or if there is no love, no hate, no jealousy, no fear present, they are just feelings. They arise, they stay, and pass away. We don't attach to any of these feelings as ours, that they are just simply feelings that arise in the mind. Then there arises the quality of knowing. We call this the one who knows. This is what looks over the mind. And we also don't attach to this one who knows as ours. We put that down as well. Then the purity of the mind arises. But if our mindfulness isn't enough, then suffering arises, which is a feeling arising. The suffering arises in the heart. We then watch that feeling of suffering. If there is anger, thoughts of ill will, then we have mindfulness present and keep watching it and knowing it. If we know things in time as they arise, then the feelings of happiness or suffering will just pass away on its own. But if we can't do this and we have lingering ill will or anger, then we should develop metta or loving kindness as the object for our minds. We develop thoughts such as, may I be well and happy. May all beings be well and happy. May no beings harm each other at all. When we wake up in the morning, we reflect that this life of ours is uncertain and we determine that today, when we have angry thoughts that will inevitably arise over the course of the day, we won't get angry and harm anyone. If it arises, then we won't harm anyone and will try to let it go and determine to develop loving kindness instead. Even if we determine in this way, when we meet with unwanted external objects, then the anger really arises, we still get angry. But it's a strength of the mind to prepare it with mindfulness and know that this anger is not good and unwholesome, and it just burns our heart. Then we keep developing metta or loving kindness till the anger slowly fades away. Then the coolness immediately enters and the fire of that anger cools down. It's like in summer on a hot day, we drink a cold drink and the heat disappears. Or if we take a cold shower, the heat disappears. Or if on a hot day we enter an air-conditioned room, then the heat disappears. This coolness of the heart is metta and can enter immediately. So we train in this way. If we ask, when will this anger completely disappear from our hearts? We reflect on our life, and we've been around for a while, for 20, 30, 40, 50 or 60 years. And so can this anger disappear quickly? How long will it take? Well, this anger can disappear quickly if we have a lot of coolness in our hearts. If there is a lot of mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, then we can extinguish anger and hatred quickly. But if we have only a small amount of mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, then to extinguish that anger will take a long time, because the heat is much greater than the coolness. This is because we have regularly fallen to anger, and so if we want to practice to overcome it quickly, then it just isn't possible. It takes time. But the ones that can do it quickly, it's because they have developed their spiritual capacity a lot more in the past. If we look back to our past lives, then we'll realize that we've had this anger and hatred for a very long, uncountable amount of lifetimes. But now we will start to do something about it. This lifetime we will train. And then when we train the mind in this life, then the next life it will be less. The anger and ill will be less, and the mind will be peaceful. And we'll know in time that the cause of this anger arising in the mind is because of this feeling of me and mine. If we change this view to see that there is no me or mine, that the body is just a body, not my body, that this mind is just a mind, it isn't my mind, then greed, anger, delusion will be weakened from this knowing and present awareness. We will change the wrong views to that of right views, that is, a sotapanna or stream entry. In the Buddha's time, they saw and understood this very easily. This was because they had fulfilled their spiritual potential already. It's like a full cup of water. Just a few more drops of water, and then it will overflow. But if the cup is only half full of water, then you need to fill it up a lot. So we determine that this life will go for it, and we'll try to see the Dhamma this life. We must be able to do it. So we practice this way, and we aim to develop in terms of the mind. We won't get lost in terms of material and external development, because when the world develops, the heart darkens and wisdom doesn't arise. So we need to make the mind develop as well, so that Dhamma arises in the heart. So we compare and contemplate this way, following the teachings of the Buddha, and we will see the Dhamma and be able to change from wrong views to right views. May you all grow in blessings.